So today I'm back in Swindon with Neil Marshall. It's much less snowy than my last time I was in Swindon doing an audio recording. And I'm drinking a lovely cup of I can't say Lapsang Souchong. How do I say that?
Lapsang
Yeah, tea with Neil, so that's great. So Neil, the first question that we've got is where did we first meet?
Now, this is a bit of a poser because I was trying to think back to where we first met. Clearly, it must have been Edinburgh somewhere.
Somewhere in Edinburgh.
Somewhere in Edinburgh. Now, I know we attended the same Christian Union house party in first year, but I'm not convinced we met at that.
I'm that's not what I would have said, you see. I wouldn't have said that was where we met.
So it's not that. So then I'm thinking towards Kayleigh's and said.
Kayleigh's. I think we probably met at the Chaplaincy Centre having lunch.
Have you got a clear recollection of that?
I've got a recollection of me being sitting next to you and some other Methsoc people, I think, having lunch in the Chaplaincy Centre and not being able to understand a word that you said.
Because I mumble and speak too fast. When someone actually told me at some point, what do always catch what you say, Neil? I've since then attempted to speak more clearly. I think it was Stephen Hughes, mutual friend.
Stephen's going to appear later.
Yes, Stephen would appear later. One day commented that I don't always understand what you say, Neil. And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
But no, but that didn't take long for me to
No.
get my ear in.
Good, good.
We had that thing, didn't we, where I sat next to your sister in choir at P's and G's for 2.5 years before I realised she was your sister.
Yes.
She did have a different surname, so.
She was married, and yes, and she was all grown up. So we think we met somewhere in the Chaplaincy Centre at
Edinburgh
Edinburgh
University.
University.
Yes.
And from then on, we were kind of aware of each other's existence.
Yes.
And then after that, I suppose the first time we spent any meaningful time together was on a canal boat holiday.
When did you first meet my husband?
I first met your husband back in 1983, it would have been on the Seafield playing fields in Aberdeen of Robert Gordon's College. When we were both in the same group for people who are inept at rugby.
Yes.
Yes, and knew each other a little bit from that because he was in the top set at college and I was not in that top set. But then he then moved away to greater things in Edinburgh a year, 1984, I think, after 1 year. And then we met up again in Edinburgh. Recognised each other,
Yep.
pretty much had mutual friends, but it wasn't until we were sent to the south of England in exile,
Yeah.
yes, that as fellow Scots that we started hanging out together in desperation for
Yeah, small party of exile. It did feel like
yes,
that a bit, actually.
it did at the start, yes.
Yeah. No, it was good. What's your favourite cup of tea?
So my favourite kind of tea is most definitely what we're drinking today, which is Lapsang Souchong tea, which I think I first encountered it at a festival at the tiny tea tent at a festival called Green Belt, and I just randomly tried it, and yes, I just loved it. It's got a very smoky flavour to it, as our Lapsang Souchong. You can smell that coming through the tea as you drink it. And it's a little bit different from a lot of your standard teas, from your rather boring Earl Greys or your standard British tea. Your sort of bog standard builders afternoon tea stuff.
It has a peated whiskey overtone.
It
Do you
does.
think that's
I think
it?
it is creeping towards. You could hide whiskey in it quite easily from the West Coast, and it would be delicious.
Yes, I would just like to point out that we don't have whiskey in our tea at the moment. Maybe
No.
we'll save that for another time.
Yes. But no, it was definitely the flavour, and then drinking it outdoors at a festival, it was really nice. And then I started drinking it as a sort of more special occasion tea, as one does at home.
How do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Is Christianity in the UK, is it not dying but sleeping? I was trying to work this one out over the last week. It's interesting. I think on a cultural level, Christianity is in deep trouble, because in my daily work and talking to people, and I work in a FE college, and the people I speak to, it's very clear that the vast majority of them have got no idea at all what the Christian faith is about. And I know if I ask them questions about Bible stories and what Christians believe, that majority of them wouldn't have a clue about it. And it does amuse me when people will go, "Oh, I'm not religious," or will say to me, "Are you religious?" And it just shows that Christianity is one step away. So they often feel that Christianity in the UK is in great danger of dying out in certain parts of the culture, certainly in popular culture. It lacks meaning for people. And I know that at college, at Christmas and Easter, etc., all the focus is on Santa Claus and chocolate.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you that, and that's further down the list, and we can do the questions out of order, I guess, was because you're currently working with young people who are vulnerable, and some might say on the fringes of the UK society. Yeah. I don't know whether you would say that or not about them.
They're definitely on the fringes of mainstream society.
And would you observe that Christianity or the church has any positive impact on them at all?
I was thinking about when I first started working with this kind of young people, I started working in Swindon. When I was recruited, as one was, to the department in those days, the person who recruited us was a Christian, and I discovered that practically all the tutors and support staff in that particular department had some kind of church type connection, and only a couple of people didn't, which was very, and I gave the whole thing a very much a Christian ethos to what we were doing, and it sort of felt a little bit like my mission is to work with these young people. That's how I'm living out my faith. Now I've moved to a different college. As far as I'm aware, I'm probably the only person who would call themselves a Christian pretty much in the department. Nobody else has ever admitted to such in my presence. So it kind of feels that idea of what I'm doing, being run by being organised people of faith, isn't there in the same way. But do I still feel I'm on some kind of mission from God? I'm wearing dark sunglasses, etc., and all that kind of stuff. As I do kind of feel that is my living up my Christian life, is working with these young people in that particular college. So, yes. And do I feel that we're implementing Christian values in what we're doing? Yes, I do, because the values we're very much about is including young people and not excluding them and giving them direction in their lives. So I feel that still there is that underpinning of everything we do. It's got a Christian underpinning. Whether the people I work with are fully aware that they're often putting in what I think are Christian beliefs and viewpoints, they're probably surprised by that. Do I feel that the church, as a church, is making a really positive impact on those particularly young people? In the place, in the town where I work, I know that one of the groups of the young people is organised by a local church.
Okay.
And it's run on the church premises. I don't know much about that particular group and haven't investigated it, but I know that does exist. So I still think there is some positive impact, but I don't feel that the church is setting out with a particular mission in that town to work with those young people. Though of course there are Christian organisations which do.
Yeah. So what were the best and worst things for you about being the child of a minister?
So in my case, my father, when I was growing up, was not a minister of a church as such. He was what was called a Methodist local preacher, which meant he was involved in helping to run the church and do some of the preaching, but he wasn't the main man. But the other string to my father's bow was that he was a lecturer at the local university in theology. And in the local area, he was well known because he was involved in the training of ministers. And he'd lived in Aberdeen for the last 45 years, whatever that point, when I was growing up. And so he was well known. And so what that meant was that within the north of Scotland, if I went to any kind of church event and it came out my name was Marshall and I was from Aberdeen, then people would put two and two together and they would know who I was the son of. And so there was a certain notoriety of being my father's son, and it would keep bumping into people who knew him or knew of him. So I never felt that I could escape that sort of notoriety of people knowing who I am. So I quite enjoyed a little bit of fame it gave me at that point. It was quite amusing to go, say, to Dundee, meet someone I never met before, and discover that actually they knew my family already.
Yeah.
Within the circles. That was quite fun. Though it did kind of make you feel that there's always someone keeping an eye on you with it. I know my sister, especially my middle sister, didn't like it at all. And she moved away from the area, from Aberdeen, pretty much when she was 18, and never really come back. And I think she was quite glad to escape that reputation. Yeah, so I think the difficult thing is being the son of someone heavily involved in the church as a minister was an expected standard of behaviour, an expectation of you, and people to ask you, are you going to follow in your daddy's footsteps? Are you going to become a minister too? So that answer always was, no, I am not going to do that. And then I think the other difficult part was, because my father was quite intellectual and well known in his field, there was always the expectancy of, why aren't you doing as well intellectually as your father, type thing, and shouldn't you be some kind of high flyer as well with things? And I think I found that a burden throughout my life. I've never had my father's work ethic to work as hard as he did or to achieve in the way he has. And though I'm quite content in what I do now, there's always a nagging thing of, shouldn't you have done more to be following in footsteps? And kind of the feeling that you've sort of let the slide down a little bit. Yeah, so I think it's no different than, say, if your parent is a local politician or some other kind of reasonably well-known authority figure. It's the same sort of little bit of, not oppression, but feeling of people watching you and keeping an eye on you with your behaviour. Yeah, so it's a little bit tough, but it depends on your parents, how they treat it, and the people. I think the advantage of it when I was growing up is because my father was involved in an organisation or something which I spent a lot of time at, then you got to see behind the scenes and you got to play around in behind the scenes. And I suppose it's no different from the child of an actor or director being allowed on set to see what happens in the background, or child some other kind of, if your dad's a police officer, I don't know, going down the local police station and having a look around after hours. It's good fun to see how things work out with it. Yeah, and then there was the fact that you got chance to get involved in organisation and taking a little bit of leadership and doing things where you wanted to do, and getting sometimes a little bit of licence to play around with things. So that was great. And then I suppose the other thing is, because I am a Christian, growing up with someone who's a leader in the local church meant that I got a very, very, very thorough grounding in the Christian faith. So I found when I've studied to become a local preacher myself that I knew a lot of it, or had a good solid grounding before I started, so it was quite easy. I've always had a pretty good understanding of my faith, though my faith has changed over the years, and myself and my father, we would not agree, if he was still with us, on that many things. Quite often now, I think, our views on different matters would be quite different.
Mm.
But yeah, in hindsight, I think it was a benefit. Yeah, outweighs the silly things, rules we had about not being allowed out on Sundays and being limited in what we do and that kind of stuff. And my mother's desire for us to have to wear Sunday best back in the day.
Next question is about you being a local preacher.
Yes.
So you're a Methodist local preacher. How long have you been a Methodist local preacher now?
An awful long time. It was 2018 now, and I qualified round about 2001, 2003. So it must be at least 15 plus years.
We're feeling old now.
We're feeling old now, yes.
We're feeling old now. How would you explain your hopes for church congregations when you're preaching and leading a service? Do you have a learning objective for those times?
I think, first of all, people mix up preaching and mix up leading a service or leading worship, as people like to call it, and put the two together. I think if I was an Anglican, then when I talk about leading worship, it would be very much all about bringing people into the presence of God and leading communion and such like, and then the preaching is a little bit off to one side. I think as a Methodist, we probably try to be a bit more holistic, if that's the word I'm looking for, in that my entire service will be about something or other, some set theme.
Mm.
And then I will choose the music and the prayers will be chosen to reflect that particular theme. And perhaps there's more attention of trying to make a point or series of points or like learning objective during your service. With it. So you can edit this later. So I think more trying to think. Yeah, so when I lead worship, I certainly have an objective what I'm trying to do. And when I'm struggling, I will write it down like I'm planning a school lesson. I'll write down my objective, or rather my overall aim, my aim is, and then have my objectives what I'm trying to achieve with my whole service, which will include the sermon, which I quite like, because otherwise I find sometimes preachers who see whatever this reading for the Sunday is and then preach in that. Sometimes I seem to hear the same sermon preached on different passages over a period of time, and with some individuals I know what they're going to say next, I know what their points are going to be and where it's going to go, because of the way they come at it, and they consciously or unconsciously, there's great danger of retreading the same water, going backwards and forwards across the same ground.
What's the most fun we have ever had together that is broadcastable?
Most fun, I've enjoyed holidays.
Mm-hmm.
We've been away, enjoyed meals around the house. I've loved going to Kayleigh's. That's Scottish dancing for those who don't understand these things. Yeah, really enjoy that. Actually, I think the most fun we've ever had actually was canal holiday.
That was the canal
much.
Holiday was really, really good fun.
Yes.
Actually, I think probably we drank champagne on that canal boat when you and Natalie got engaged, didn't we?
We did, yes.
And that, I was thinking, that was pretty special, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
It was a long, long time ago now. But I think probably, yeah. What is your favourite thing beginning with T?
I think my favourite thing beginning with T are probably triangulation points on Scottish mountains.
That doesn't surprise me at all. That's a really, really clever thing, beginning with T, that I know you like.
It is. I got to feel, I felt a little bit of a cheat here. I was trying to think of things starting with T, and I couldn't think of any one particular thing which I would love. And I thought triangulation points. And I suppose I'm really looking for them to be cairns.
Yes.
But I've always, when I've been walking, I've always loved getting to the top of the mountain And on top, there's always a stone cairn, and there was always a little concrete pillar with a mysterious metal circle engraved on the top of it with three points coming out of it. And never quite understanding as a child what that was about, and being told that it was to do with the making of maps. Mm. And that's always intrigued me. But I've never really understood how it actually worked. But I think what I loved about it was the fact you got to the top and there it was, and you could climb and sit in it and you could see the view, and you know you'd achieved getting to the top of your summit.
I'd just like to say thank you for having me for my cup of tea today, Neil.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for being part of the tea drinking project. And thank you for being my friend for more years than I care to remember.